We serve a God who is very kind and who is very powerful. In this encounter in Acts 14, the people in Lystra are told of God's kindness and they see God's power. They have experienced their whole lives the kindness of God and indeed lived in his power even without knowing it. But now as they see this healing, the kindness and power of God are before their eyes. We serve a God who is so kind and so good for people that we ought to be delighted to share that message just as Paul and Barnabas did. We are called, as Paul says, to warmly welcome each other into the church, just as Christ has warmly welcomed you. Then God will be glorified. God's people, knowing a kind and powerful God, are called to welcome others to know this God. It is a privilege and a joy. So today and over the next 4 weeks, we're going to look at what this church, who are around this kind and powerful God, experiencing his goodness and his strength day by day, what we should be as we encourage others to join us. 2.5 years ago, nearly three, we adopted a new vision and mission statement. As St. Philip's Deep Creek or Deep Creek Anglican Church, we had a great vision and mission, which was to live and love like Jesus. And now we have put some detail to that. What is our church going to look like if we do that? Because that was an awesome vision. What is our church going to look like? And what is our particular, specific call here with this group of people, this leadership, this property, in this place? So we have this as a welcoming and growing multi-generational church with refreshing faith in Jesus Christ. We will be life-giving to the believer, surprising to the world, and strengthening to the weary and doubting. Now, you can tell that's come from me coming in because I am far too wordy as a leader. But I love detail. I love for us to know, yes, yes, I want to live like Jesus, but does that mean this whole thing is my mission statement? Well, how can I crystallize that into some detail, helpful detail for me now? This year, if you caught my vision address toward the end of last year, you'll know that we're focusing on those three adjectives at the start of refreshing faith in Jesus Christ. We're focusing on welcoming, growing, and multi-generational. Because even though they seem like bread and butter, we shouldn't take them for granted. We need to actually know how to live out and live into this vision, this calling. So today we look at welcoming. How will we be a welcoming church in 2022? Is this what you think of when you think of being a welcoming church? The smiliest people at the door. I don't know if you can remember when you've come to a church or even to another group or club for the first time and what that welcome was like. Maybe if you've been to a few different churches like we have, you've experienced the whole range. You know, you can kind of have to force your way in as people who already know each other are sort of crowding the foyer and don't look at you. That happens. Or like when Phil and I visited a Korean church with some Korean students we were working with, all the visitors had to stand up and everybody turned towards them, lifted their hands like this and sang a song of welcome while we stood and received it in Korean. And that obviously was a very different cultural experience, but it was also quite an intense welcoming moment. Melissa Brown, who is the wife of a man that I was ordained with, Steve, 16 years ago, she tells the story of when they were welcomed at a church in Sydney and all guests were given a ribbon to pin to their clothes so that they were very visible, and each one was assigned someone to sort of follow them around and make sure that they knew where everything was and had someone to talk to. For some of us, some temperaments would love that. Some not. And actually in this day and age, people love the thought of being able to slip into the back, check things out, and kind of slide out again during the last song. But we are called to be a welcoming church. And it's far more than what happens at the door or in the welcome time. We are called first and foremost to see people. Now, this passage that I had read from Acts 14, you might think, what has that got to do with welcoming? In that passage, all the drama, all the power, the persecution, the opposition, the excitement, the growth, all of that is bookended by two moments of a community that sees and knows each other. If you've got your Bibles there, feel free to turn, but I will read it to you. So Paul is preaching in Lystra, and there was a man who was sitting there as part of his teaching, and he had not been able to walk since he was born. Paul, it says, looked directly at him, saw that he had faith to be healed, and called out, "Stand up on your feet." At that, the man jumped up and began to walk. Then, of course, everything starts to happen. But it was in that small moment of Paul seeing that man, looking directly at that man and seeing him, observing his needs, seeing his responses, being empowered by the Holy Spirit to know that he had faith to be healed. This huge story of bulls being brought and sacrificed and Paul being stoned all begins with him seeing an individual. And that is the call of Jesus' disciples, because that is what Jesus did. Jesus' ministry was always about seeing the individual. We know that when he spoke both to people who accepted him and who didn't, it was about those moments when he saw, when he engaged, he stopped, and there was a connection. You remember the man who, the rich young ruler or the rich young man, and who Jesus says, you know, you have to give away everything. And it says Jesus looked at him and loved him. Even in that moment of actual dissonance, Jesus saw him. Jesus just didn't speak about everybody giving away their possessions and teaching the crowds. Jesus looked at him and loved him. You might remember too, in the midst of the crowds, a woman who needed healing from bleeding touched Jesus' robe and she was healed. And Jesus, having felt this healing take place, says the power went out from him, stopped to look around to see the individual. When people brought the children to Jesus, even though he's in the middle of ministry, he stops to receive and welcome the individuals, the kids. Jesus saw people. And so Paul is simply doing what his master did. Jesus, in seeing people, is actually only doing what the heart of the Father is. You might remember a pretty rough story in Genesis 16 where Hagar and Ishmael head out into the wilderness. Hagar was Abraham and Sarah's servant woman, and Abraham fathers a child by her. That's a euphemism. And she has this child, Ishmael, and there is a lot of conflict between Hagar and Sarai, because Sarai hasn't been able to have a child. Hagar has. What's this going to mean? And she is mistreated, and so she heads out to the wilderness. And it says, the angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. And he said, where have you come from? Or he says, Hagar, slave of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going? I'm running away from my mistress Sarai, she answered. Then the angel of the Lord told her, go back, I will increase your descendants so much they will be too numerous to count. He speaks of Hagar, and there's two moments when she goes out to the wilderness, this one and then when she's had the child. And she gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her, El Roy, you are the God who sees me. For she said, I have now seen the one who sees me. In our very earliest chapters of the scriptures, we find that one of the names for God is the God who sees, and the God who sees me. The God who knows Hagar by name. The God who cares and provides and guides, who is interested in her life and who is there with her. And so as we are to be a welcoming community, it starts with seeing people. Now that, at a very basic level, means on a Sunday looking up and seeing who is here, observing how they are, and whether there is something that God is calling you to interact and engage with them on. Looking up from our busyness and saying, either I don't know that person, or I see that person standing alone. I think there's a call for me to speak with them. But seeing someone is more than just observing who is here. It is showing that interest, that knowledge, that observing, and taking the time to get to know. Susan presented these kids by name, and there's been studies to show that there's a direct correlation between whether kids stick around in church as they get older and how many people in the church knew their name. That's pretty sobering, because I am desperate for that to be the case, right, in our family. And so if we are a community that sees all the generations, and Ben's going to speak to us being a multi-generational church in a couple of weeks, We are actually doing that work of keeping people in the community of God. So we are called to be people who see others. And maybe this is just the call that you need, just this first point. It's to say, when I come to church, I need to look up. This is not just a moment for me. This is a moment to see others and for them to know that they are seen, because that's what transformed those times in Genesis, in the Gospels, and in Acts 14. But there is a second step, and it is to make space for friendship. Recently, Mike Frost, and you might remember that we did some of his material on Surprising the World, I think just before COVID hit, possibly, or at the end of 2019. He recently published an article called The Lonely Crowd, Churches Dying Due to Friendlessness. He says, I've lost count of the number of Christians who've told me they either stopped attending church or left their church to join another one because they couldn't make any friends there. They report that the church people were friendly enough. They were hospitable and welcoming. As one person told me, they're nice to you, but no one becomes your friend. And it hurts when all that friendliness leads only to friendlessness. That is a big challenge. And why I have said that this is about making space for friendship. Because if you're anything like me, you think, I have the capacity to be friendly, but I really don't know that I've got the space to open up my life to someone new, particularly someone who might not always be easy to relate to. Now, many in here do that, and I have been so blessed to see it. But it will require a shift in our priorities. People need actual friends, not just friendly folk around them. And I believe that's what's happening at the end of this passage in Acts 14, where Paul is thought to be dead, the crowd having turned on them. They stoned Paul and dragged him outside the city, thinking he was dead. But after the disciples had gathered around him, he got up and went back into the city. Now, I'm not sure whether that's shorthand for the disciples praying and ministering miraculous healing to him, or whether that's the disciples bringing bottles of water and bandages and food and blankets. Probably both. The people of God came around Paul, and they gave him what he needed because they knew each other. They were close and they were willing to make space in each other's lives to care for one another. Making space for friendship will look like going out of our way to spend a bit of extra time, maybe catching up for coffee or going for a walk, maybe inviting to our home. Following up, sending a message, giving a call. But it will also mean seeing what is needed and seeing whether you can give that. Again, Melissa Brown, in her article about being a welcoming church, talks about how if someone has a need, if there is a way that you can meet that is a wonderful way to welcome people into the community. She talks about how someone who came who was a new person in the town, but they were a teacher and they wanted to get a job, and so they started connecting them to people in the congregation who were in that industry. But it will also mean that we need to be vulnerable with others. One of the things that is very hard for people when they come in and experience a friendly church but they don't make friends is to see that people are also struggling in life. If you don't get to know someone, you don't see the grace of God working in their life, in their brokenness. So unless I am vulnerable with you as a friendship is developing in some way, and not all friendships are the same, that's okay. You know, we're not asking everybody to be a BFF. But unless I am vulnerable with you, you will eventually leave because you know yourself to be broken and you've never seen anybody else the same. But we all are broken, right? And we are all in need of God's forgiveness and power. We've all got our questions and our doubts. We're all weary. We're all worried. All of these things. And so until we are willing to make space for that, for friendliness to move towards some kind of friendship where there is mutual vulnerability, people won't actually experience the power and goodness of God like in this passage, because they'll think, well, if these people are the ones who are God's people, I just don't fit. But of course they do. Everybody's normal until you get to know them, right? They just need to get to know us and we need to get to know them. Or finally, the third point, and this kind of just takes us just that next bit deeper because you're already feeling it. You have to embrace the friction of this. It's not easy. It's not easy to look up on a day when the computer dies and your kids, you know, you've got a million of them and they've got to all go to children's church. And then you've got to feed them and all of that. It's not easy. And then it's even harder to think about how you open up your life, actually even safely, right? To someone that might be really different to you. I don't know if you're going to watch the Winter Olympics or whether you're embracing the diplomatic boycott. It's up to you. We like to have our cake and eat it too, I think is the situation. So the Winter Olympics gives you that rush. Why? Because almost all the sports are about lack of friction. So catching the train yesterday, like this is the fast and the slow ones, catching the train yesterday back from the cathedral, and one of the metro people was saying to another one of the staff, oh, I've just been watching the curling and I'm nearly asleep. But the curling itself, right, that's about the lack of friction. But the best stuff, all the stuff that we love and the things and the really tiny and the wind thing and the really fast, or the going down the hill really fast and then going up something really fast and doing a thing really fast. very gifted I am in sports. all of that relies on lack of friction. So what makes everything so fast is that you've got this tiny melting ice and snow, right? And so everything is so shiny and smooth and being you're being carried along, which is brilliant. Until you want to turn, stop, or go somewhere else. One of the problems with climate change and I don't know, if you're into skiing, maybe this will be a motivating thing, is that the use of and the requirement to have more artificial snow actually increases the danger for athletes such as these because it decreases the friction. It makes everything even icier. You can't make artificial snow without it getting quite icy compared to normal snow. Walking in a winter, you know, whatever. So more accidents happen when there's artificial snow because the athletes can't turn properly, they're going too fast, they can't, all of these things, they can't avoid each other. You and I come to church and we really just want it to be that. Just smooth, man. And we want it actually to be that frictionless moment in a very friction-full week. And sometimes the only chance that we get to see the people that we love from this community. We don't see them during the week. And so we want this time to be just a great speeding down the hill. Or perhaps if you're into it, just curling, just slow. And but if we just want to keep going like that, then that's fine. But what if God is calling us to turn? What if God is calling us to grow? What if God has something for us that we need to stop and pivot? What if there is something, an obstacle in our way and we have to avoid it? Well, things that cause us friction in the church are actually going to be our friend. They really are. They make us stop and think. They make us turn again to God's Spirit and say, I don't have the capacity for this, God. I need you. And that moment of surrender to Him is that moment of power, of growth, of change. There may be all kinds of things that cause us friction. But welcoming others into our community is pretty high up there. It's for every community, always, all humans. But we are called to do it because Christ has welcomed us. Other translations of this passage say, accept one another, just as Christ has accepted you, or receive one another as Christ has received you. Welcome, accept, receive, because Christ has done it for you and it glorifies God. So we need to commit to seeing people, really seeing people. We need to commit to make space for friendships. And we do need to embrace that friction so that we can follow God where He's calling Deep Creek. Amen.